source of deep resentment in Israel and elsewhere.
May I?
I would like several responses to that question, if possible.
Let me say that there are certain things that I certainly agree with Wolf Blitzer regarding the extensive coverage and Israel being held to a higher standard. But let me provide to you the other perspective, which obviously from his perspective, it looks one way. You see, right here in this country, we are constantly being reminded, and in fact the world is reminded, that Israel is a democracy, that the rest of the people surrounding Israel are savages and they have no civilization. If Israel claims to be a democracy, surely it ought to be judged by the standards of democracy, not by the standards of the savages. Therefore, if there is a coverage of Israeli activities that is quite extensive, I think it is so. But let me also tell you that in fact, even with this extensive coverage, I believe that the entire coverage, the amount of acres of newsprint or hours of television reporting actually does not necessarily signify or necessarily mean that that news coverage is giving accurate picture of precisely what is happening. Let me give you examples. From now on, make it a point to note, if, for instance, an Israeli is killed in either the West Bank, whether it is a soldier or an innocent civilian or any other person, rest assured that you would have extensive coverage of that event, the legitimate and understandable grief of his family and his burial ceremony shown on prime time for extensive period on US networks. Yet when hundreds of Palestinian children have been killed, ask yourselves, how many times have you seen their grieving families being shown on your television screens? Surely the Palestinian mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers hurt just as much as the Israeli mothers and sisters and brothers and fathers do. So why is there a double standard? There is a double standard, but that double standard is in favor of Israel. My colleague says that there are hordes of journalists in Israel covering the event. Of course there are hordes of journalists, but why doesn't he also mention that all those journalists are subjected to military censorship? Israel is supposed to be a democracy. It's supposed to be a free society. Of course, he's concerned about the plight of the Bulgarians or the people in Burundi and so on. So are we. But I'm afraid this particular panel is discussing the Intifada. This is concerning Israel, not the events in Burundi. And let me finally also mention that in Israel, it is claimed that it has a free press. It has a free press only to a point. The press in Israel is free as far as the Hebrew press is concerned. The same articles, if they are translated into the Arab press, are censored by the Israeli military. What kind of press censorship is this? There are at least 25,000 Arabic books that are banned in the occupied territories. If you look at the Arabic press, there are large sections that are just filled with all kinds of nonsensical news because the Israeli censors have picked up stories that have actually appeared in the Israeli press. So yes, there is, within Israel and outside, there is extensive coverage of what is going on, but it is going from a very particular and a very selective perspective, as well as subject to Israeli military censorship.
The program, which may be advertised on the Intifada, gets into many, many different subjects. And I have lots of questions here that are going to seem possibly a little bit remote, but maybe not. Here are three questions addressed to Father Jenko. Are you not concerned about the destruction of Christian Lebanon? Why is the Intifada deserving your attention and 100,000 dead Lebanese are not? Why such selective concern? Would you care to discuss the plight of the Armenian and Jewish community in Syria? And would you care to speculate why the Pope and world Christianity do not rise up in response to the plight of the Maronite Christians in Lebanon who face genocide at the hands of Muslim extremists such as the Islamic Hezbollah? That's a mouthful.
If I can remember all those questions. I was asked to speak about Intifada, and Intifada is happening in Palestine, Israel. So that's why I didn't zero in on the Lebanon or other questions of of Lebanon or Syria or the Armenians. I just didn't think it was necessary for me to direct my attention to that part of the world. I now look at, you know, that part of the world, and I see that there is a new president in Lebanon now. And I see this morning on the news, a car was parked, and it blew up and killed innocent men, women, and children. The new president arrived in the country. He was a block away from his new residence. That's how they resolve issues. And I keep saying, well, why, if we're going to resolve issues, why don't we go to the peace table? The Lebanese Maronite patriarch, by Lebanese Maronite Christians, was dragged from his bed and made to kiss the portrait of General Aoun. And they took down the portraits of the Pope and the patriarch. Now, I find that difficult to comprehend. You know, if I'm supposed to support, you know, that Christian movement, and then I wonder about that, is that, you know, an organization that I'm supposed to support? I want to support the rebirth of Lebanon. Right now, there seems to be this possibility. But then we have those who say, it doesn't represent us. And then I have to listen to your leader, the patriarch of Lebanon, the Maronite, who agreed with the election of the new president. Now, whom am I to believe? Am I to believe those who say he does not represent us? Or am I supposed to believe, you know, the patriarch who says he's duly elected? So we have that conflict right now. In the Armenians in Syria, one of the difficulties that I always find in this world that you and I live in is when we as Americans live in a separation of church and state, and we grew up with that, and we protect that. And then in certain parts of the world, I see that, you know, we don't have that separation of church and state. And so what we have to try to do in those kind of situations is insert our minds into that mentality that would have an Islamic state, for example. Why? Why should it be an Islamic state? Why should it be a religious state? And in those states, then we have to say, well, what are the human rights that I need to protect from my brothers and sisters who are Christians there? A marvelous document would be to go back to the United Nations, look at the Charter of Human Rights, and say, can you agree with these? And then see where people are with these. That's what I would like to do, is when we talk about the Palestinian state and the Israeli state, I sometimes wonder, are we talking about secular states? Are we talking about religious states? Are we talking about theocracy? Are we talking about democracy? There are all kinds of things that, you know, blend into my thinking on this. So I would wish that they all could be, you know, totally full citizens of every nation. That no matter in what part of the world, a Catholic can't be the King of England, you know. A Baptist can't be Pope. You know, I can see some of the complexities of these, you know. But when we talk about the world that you and I live in, I would hope that we live in a pluralistic society. And we have this. On the eve of my release, Hodge said to me, Abuna, we have the same God. We have the same father of faith, Abraham. We reverence Jesus as great prophet, Miriam as mother of the Lord of Jesus. And we have the same moral code. Why can't we build on that which unites us instead of work on that which separates us off? And that has kind of stayed with me for all these years now. Let's build on what unites us and not separate us off. We have this kind, gentle God. We are brothers and sisters to each other. I would like full citizenship for everyone. And religious stamp doesn't, you know, separate you off as a full citizen of any country.
The chair would now like to address Mr. Blitzer.